Welcome back to the Children's Hour. Today we're learning about caves from our three expert guests.
What kinds of larger creatures live in caves?
Ooh, I used to study what are called camel crickets, and there's one kind that's more adapted. It's lighter in color and has a longer ovipositor, which is how you lay your eggs deeper in the soil and protect them from the beetles that like to eat the eggs. So there's these crickets, and there's the beetles that eat those eggs. Do you know that there are actually centipedes and scorpions that are cave adapted and have no eyes?
You're going to make people not want to cave if you tell them about
that. Oh, but they're so cool. They're completely white.
What is an extremophile?
So I would say an extremophile is someone who lives, we call it an extreme environment, and it's limiting in some way. So in the cave, one of the main limiting is that we don't have sunlight. So we don't have photosynthesis as the basis of our food chain. So they have to find other ways to live. But you can be an extremophile if you live in an extremely cold environment or an extremely hot environment. So bacteria and another domain of life called archaea that live in like a hot spring where it's almost boiling water, they are also extremophiles.
So extremophiles aren't just found in caves. They're found in extreme environments.
Exactly.
And we're pretty boring. We eat carbon and we like things to be sort of warm, but cave animals can exist in lots of different environments. And then extremophiles can exist in all kinds of environments everywhere.
What is the largest extremophile?
If you could go to places in Southeast Asia, there's some really big ones there. I haven't had the privilege of doing that, unfortunately. But there's some really cool spiders in the cave in Mexico where we go.
And then there's also in the cave in Mexico, there's white fish, but they kind of look like they have blue eyeshadow on, and they're very fun to look at.
Why are so many cave animals void of color?
So think about if you don't have a lot to eat, you've got to be careful with your energy. And so nobody can see you, so color doesn't matter. The ones that don't put their energy into pigment are more likely to survive. And if they reproduce, their kids become more and more white. Same with eyes. They aren't much use in the dark.
So they just evolve to eventually not have eyes.
Yes. And that makes different categories of cave animals. There are troglobitic ones, totally cave adapted, lose their pigment, get longer legs, lose their color. And then there's troglophiles, which live in the caves and are somewhat cave adapted, but there are also ones on the surface like them. And then there's troglozines, ones that come and go from the cave like the camel crickets or the bat.
Are some of these extremophiles helpful to humans?
Oh, yes. So we've been participating in studies where we've looked at a group of bacteria called actinobacteria, and they're responsible for something like 60% of the naturally occurring antibiotics out there. And in the caves, there's a lot of undiscovered types of actinobacteria that would have the potential to make new types of antibiotics.
Because there's no sunlight in caves, I'm sure it gets really very cold. So exactly how cold does it get?
It actually doesn't get very cold. So the thing about caves is they kind of stay a solid temperature year round. So it can be cold, like the caves out at El Malpais National Monument. They're about the same temperature as your refrigerator. Or like the cave in Carlsbad, I think it's about 55 to 60 the whole year round. So that's the great thing about caves is that their temperature doesn't fluctuate like it does on the surface.
That's Jenny Hathaway. She's in charge of the lab at the University of New Mexico in the biology department studying microbes. We're also here with Dr. Diana Northup, who is a cave biologist and a scientist at the University of New Mexico, and her student, Ryan Azadalar. And we're going to come back and talk more with Jenny and Dr. Northup and Ryan right after this. This is Dangerous Dick and the Duck Busters.
Now when I started caving a long time ago, You could fill quite a book with what I didn't know. No racks, no ascenders, and no LED lights. Only candles and carbide to show us the sights. But we somehow got by with our primitive gear. Though at our equipment, today's cavers would sneer. It was hard but rewarding, and it's easy to see why the caves of my young days keep calling to me. Now there's never a pitch like the first one you drop. No climb feels as good as the first one you top. There's nothing so tight as your first flat-out crawl, and your first Vados Canyon's the best of them all. No caves as mysterious, no havens as high as the ones you encounter the first time you try. So when I cast me mind back, it's easy to see why the caves of my young days keep calling to me. It was there that I first learned the meaning of fear. When I pushed past my limits, my next move unclear. And the times when I slipped on the crux of a climb, and me mates held me up on that thin safety line. And once I was safe, they'd say, "Good effort, son. Next time you try that, you'll know just how it's done." Yes, the lessons I learned were both priceless and free. In the caves of my young days, you keep calling to me. Now it's years since I've seen them, those caves of my youth. I've seen lots of caves since, but to tell you the truth, as I move to the close of my caving career, it's those first trips that stick in my memory so clear. And sometimes a whisper floats over the sea from the caves of my young days, so footloose and free. We haven't forgotten, please come back and see. Yes, the caves of my young days keep calling to me.
If you come in here, then you better behave.
I
I'm a salamander.
I'm a salamander.
And this is my cave.
This is my cave.
If you come in here, then you better behave.
You better behave.
I like my mud.
I like my mud.
Slippery and smooth.
Slippery and smooth.
Footsteps leave.
Footsteps leave.
Some pretty big grooves.
Some pretty big grooves.
So watch where you walk.
So watch where you walk.
Don't take a chance.
Don't take a chance.
I might crawl.
I might crawl.
Right up your pants. Walk softly
if you're coming down.
We're wonders from under the ground. Walk softly if you're coming down. We're wonders from under the ground. Yay! Good job, everybody.
That was Marion McConnell. With Wonders from Under the Ground, Caves of My Younger Days was Dangerous Dick and the Duck Busters. Both of those were winners at the annual National Speleological Society and are featured in their collection online. You can find links and pictures and so much more information at childrenshour.org. This episode is called Caves. We're talking with Dr. Diana Northup and Jenny Hathaway and Ryan Azadalar. They're all at the University of New Mexico, and they're in the biology department. They are spelunkers, and beyond that, they're biologists. We've got a lot more questions for them.
How does a cave form?
Ooh, that's a fun question. So there's lots of ways. I'm going to tell you two of them. Sometimes they form from the top down because rainwater comes in, hits the limestone and makes carbonic acid, which eats away the rock. But what we have in New Mexico is something really special. They form from the bottom up. Hydrogen sulfide comes in the cave, hits the area where there's oxygen, and it converts to sulfuric acid, something that's really, really abrasive. So we study a cave in Mexico that drips pH 0 to 1 sulfuric acid and carves out the cave from the bottom up. This is why Carlsbad has the gigantic big room. It's what's called a hypogenic cave.
I wanted to just talk about one more form of cave, which is the caves that I like to study, and they're lava caves. And so they're formed when a volcano erupts and then the surface cools, and so it forms a hard lava on top, but underneath there's still a magma that's flowing through a tube. And then when the eruption stops, that tube is left empty, and that forms a lava cave.
And in fact, that's what Jenny's son, Jack, who's here, that's where he first went into his first cave when he was 4 years old.
Do you remember this, Jack?
No, not really.
Do you remember the second one?
Yeah, better.
There was a lot of boulders in the entrance, and you had to really sort of scale the boulders down into the cave.
What exactly is spelunking?
Spelunking is exploring caves. We actually call it caving. And so that's how I got interested in caves. When I was 18, I went in my first cave and it had a stream and I fell in over my head and I thought, oh, this is super cool. Because I had a really boring childhood.
You know, not everyone would have that experience and think, gee, I want to fall into a really deep, cold waterway in the middle of a cave for the rest of my life. Only you, really, and a few others.
Oh, no, there's lots in New Mexico who've been doing this for 50 years.
What do you enjoy about caving the most?
It's quiet. It's dark.
It's amazingly quiet, and time passes in a totally different way when you're underground.
And Ryan just went in his first cave about 2 months ago.
Yeah, Ryan, how was it? Your very first cave.
The first cave I went in was Four Windows Cave at El Mapais, and it was absolutely beautiful. You have to like climb down these big rocks, and then there's a whole bunch of just green moss blanketing all over the side. And once you're in, you get to experience just total darkness. But as you look around, you see an entire wall of just pure silver looking microbes because they have little water droplets and it makes it all look silver. We saw a bat roosting in one of the corners of the caves and we had to go climb and crawl and take all these amazing pictures.
What is the largest cave you have been in?
Probably for me, it's Lechuguilla Cave. That's where I did my doctorate work. And it's now, I'm probably going to get this wrong, I think it's about 140 miles long.
That seems just so crazy. You know, you can see a movie that has Dr. Northrup going through Lechuguilla Cave. We've posted a link on our website. She was part of a NOVA special.
What kind of gear do you have to wear into these extreme climates?
We wear many layers to stay warm. We have a helmet to protect us from rocks hitting us or we hitting our heads. We have really good lights to be able to see, and we have two backup lights, because if your light dies and you're in the dark, it can be bad.
And then we always make sure we go caving with other people. And we tell people not in our party when we're going in the cave and what time to expect us back out. And the other thing that I really like caving is knee pads, because there's a lot of caves that you have to crawl in.
Tell them about rappelling into that cave.
Yes, there's some caves that's so much fun. You get to actually rappel down ropes because you have to go down. It was probably about a 40-foot drop for the one that I went into. And then after a long day of caving, you have to haul yourself back up out of the cave, up that rope, back to the top.
Caves seem like really amazing environments, but they also are pretty fragile. And I think it would be really beneficial if you helped people understand, if they decide to go into a cave, especially after hearing our great conversation, what do they need to do to protect that cave? First of all, recognizing that that cave is extremely fragile. If you knock down a stalactite, maybe it took 100 years for that stalactite.
Or more. And also, when you go in, you want to have clean clothes. You never want to leave things behind.
Leave nothing but footprints. Take nothing but photos, and kill nothing but time.
That's the motto of the National Speleological Society. And you want to constantly be aware of as you move, so you don't accidentally hit and break something that took hundreds of years to form. And you don't want to touch the walls when you absolutely don't need to, because you are shedding microbes. As you sit there, you're shedding thousands of skin cells and microbes every minute.
We've been talking with Dr. Diana Northrup. She's from the University of New Mexico. She's a world-renowned cave scientist. We're here with Ryan Azadalar. He's a senior in her class, and he studies microbes. And the manager of their lab, Jenny Hathaway, has also been our guest. I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on the Children's Hour today. Thank you, guys.
I love all your questions.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
May you go to a cave.
There's lots more information about caving, including places you can go near you, a grotto you might find, and so much more at the National Speleological Society's website, caves.org. Or just go to childrenshour.org and look for this episode, Caves. We've got more coming up. Stick with us.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Users at tokenibus.org donate to the Children's Hour every week without spending a dime. You can learn more at tokenibus.org. Thanks to the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for hosting the Children's Hour. Support for the Children's Hour is provided by United Way of North Central New Mexico. Support provided by the City of Albuquerque and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. The Children's Hour is supported in part by New Mexico Arts, a division of the Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the National Endowment for the Arts. Keep up with the Children's Hour and subscribe to our monthly newsletter at childrenshour.org.